Hey folks, it's Nick here. Before we begin, I want to draw your attention to something. Since we're all fans of MLS, I think it's important that we know about what's going on in the league and also that we help support our fellow supporters when they need it. So right now, you probably know about, and we've talked about on the show, the fact that there seems to be great uncertainty about whether or not Columbus will continue to be home of Columbus Crew. An oddly timed announcement, but one that was made nonetheless. I don't know exactly what you can do. However, there's lots of fine folks. If you go on Twitter and you use the hashtag SaveTheCrew, you can find out what's going on to help rally behind one of the original teams in MLS, a long-standing club, and a group of supporters that need help wherever they can get it, and the support of supporters around the league. So go to Twitter, go to hashtag SaveTheCrew, and follow the conversation and get involved in any way that you can and help support their cause. Okay, let's go and do our show. So as expected as a Clint Dempsey elbow to the face, it's That's So MLS. With Nick, that's me, and Andrew Bates.
Hello. Nick Thornton, how was your last weekend? How was your decision day of the season?
My hashtag decision
day. Your hashtag decision day.
Was a bit of a doozy. Admittedly, on the day I watched exactly one game, because it was very difficult to watch more than one game at a time, considering they all happened at exactly the same time.
That's right. I was able. It's like because of some vagaries around which apps do and don't Chromecast, I was able to watch way more games last weekend. Live because I was able to, because they had the, I was able to watch five East games at a time, but when TSN, because TSN Go does not Chromecast, I was only able to watch one game at a time at that time. So I was able to watch six games live in two time slots last week, and I could only watch one, paradoxically, when there was even more going on. But that is...
Which game did you watch this Sunday?
Well, that would be the Vancouver, sadness.
Okay, well...
The Vancouver sadness train.
My condolences, as did I. Also spent some time watching that. So, you know, what was an eventful day, actually, and I sort of had to take a step back today and really look at this. Although some things moved, really calling it decision day might have been a bit of a misnomer, because there wasn't all that much to do for a lot of the teams. It was really a case of one last final position in the West and where things would end up there. But otherwise, some of the games were just sort of gimmies, throwaways, if you will.
Right. We don't have a scenario.
One thing that we should... Sorry.
We don't really have a scenario like 2 years ago where you have a team like 2 years ago when Portland kind of barnstormed their way into the into one of the last remaining spots and hung by the skin of their teeth to get in there.
Not quite, no. And I mean, the interesting story that I think we can perhaps start with is the fact that the close spot that was left in the West was the sixth and final spot, and it was San Jose and FC Dallas kind of duking it out.
Yes.
For that final spot. And although FC Dallas came in and somewhat unsurprisingly blew away the Galaxy 5-1, I think perhaps the most exciting game of Decision Day, not just because it meant so much, but was San Jose and Minnesota.
Right. That one was a back and forth, if I recall.
It certainly was. Unsurprisingly, some heroics from Wanda Wondolowski to get San Jose ahead. But definitely a back and forth, and then it wasn't until the 93rd minute that Arena just calmly side-footed the final goal in, and the seven or so fans in the That's mean. I need to rein myself in more.
I like it.
The rousing home support in San Jose lost their minds, as they rightly should, and San Jose was able to clinch. So FC Dallas has got to feel pretty hard done by that they left it so late in the season to figure things out and try to put results together. But good on San Jose to clinch that final spot, as well as, you know, Minnesota, who came out and really had nothing to prove and nothing to lose, certainly gave them a good run for their money. What did you think of this match?
It's important when people always talk about the standings as a horse race. We've had this discussion before about games in hand, where you have to win your games in hand. And in another expression that always comes up is this, you know, we control our own destiny, or, you know, our fate is out of our hands situation. And this was legitimately, and I know this is a note on the Dallas match, it was San Jose's to lose against a team like Minnesota. The fact that no matter what they did, if they won, they were able to pull it in. I think it's great that they were able to get scoring, not just from Wondolowski, but the key goal was scored by a defender. I was wondering, just because it's been a rough time between this, and I don't know if he was in that U.S. squad, but Wondolowski is a player for me that's always in a strange situation, because I think MLS has these stars that go on a scoring tear 1 year, and then kind of all of a sudden for people it's like, what have you done for me lately? And Kyle Aaron is another one where it's like, 1 year they seem unstoppable, and then the next year it's kind of like somewhat moody prodigies.
Sure. Will Bruin is another.
Yes.
Vastly underrated player that...
Yes, that has ups and downs. And people really question, I think, sometimes when Wondolowski is called into the U.S. men's national team. Do you think he redeemed himself in this game?
I'll answer this question another way. I don't think Wondolowski is anything that he really needs to redeem himself for. As a long-serving vet in MLS, I think there's adequate reasons why he'd be left off of that squad. And I think that, you know, the body of work that he's created over his career speaks for itself. He's one of the best strikers in MLS and has been for 5 or 6 years consistently. Whether he's the highest scoring or in the contention for Golden Boot or not, he's actually been one of the most consistent goal scorers in MLS. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's been dips. You know, has he deserved more of a fair shake on the national team? Probably, but I really don't think he had anything to redeem himself for, and especially hearing that... to put it in perspective, that San Jose has not qualified for the playoffs since 2012. Mm-hmm. And Wondolowski has been there since then. This is a guy who, you know, he's stuck with the team.
Yeah.
Really, he could go anywhere. And I'm sure it's not as if other MLS teams haven't sought his services. Mm-hmm. But he's chose to stuck it out with San Jose. And I don't think he owes the club or his country anything, really. And I think it was another fine example of the type of performance he can put in to give a team that this year and other years has not had a lot very special going for it, just enough to make everyone play to their highest level and to get the most important result they needed, which was a win.
I think this is something that that I enjoy about it, is we've talked a little bit about teams being unimpressive somewhat in their in the way that they find victories, like in the way they complain they qualify for the playoffs, and that was something that we talked about New York, is that it's, you know, the results weren't actually that great.
No,
and San Jose was another one where it didn't really it didn't seem that that hot as the season was winding down that they were pulling out huge results. And so I think that it's great emotionally for them to have that moment of triumph to get in there, especially because they have not, as you said, been in there for like 5 years. I think that hopefully it gets fans interested. I hope that it's great to see. I always have a soft spot for Shea Salinas.
Sure.
So it's great to see him around. Of course, it's always tough to, you know, push it as the big, you know, triumphant moment when they did have the lead. Before the reason why they had to score that stoppage time winner is because they had the lead and they gave it up.
Yeah.
Which I think is also a statement to how good Minnesota is. And we've been saying it all year that the fact that they have not necessarily been a contender for a playoff spot, it is great to see this level of effort from them in the last game of their inaugural campaign.
Absolutely. And if you think about recent teams that have come into MLS, the fact that Minnesota has 10 wins to their season and 6 draws, you know, it's about half and half for their, for the 34 games, just under half getting a point or more out of, I think is a pretty decent opening campaign. I think Atlanta has sort of changed the way that people look at expansion teams, but it can't be overstated how much money Atlanta had to burn to get to that point and still is in a knockout situation. So it, it hasn't necessarily guaranteed all that. Just kind of looking at the final table, not the, the playoff brackets, but the table as it stood.
Yes.
It's interesting because I'm looking at Minnesota United and it's easy to look at the negative 23 goal difference. However, interestingly, they did score 47 goals, which is significantly more than San Jose's 39. So as much as we're talking about a team that's ended up well below the playoff cutoff line, with only 36 points, is still a decent campaign. You've got to feel like, as a Minnesota fan, I wouldn't be too put out by their season overall. Lots of stuff to tidy up and a lot of mistakes that turned out to be very costly and a number of games where they, especially early on, were giving up 5-6 goals a match. But yeah, I mean, it was, in a way, it was interesting to see some of the teams that really had nothing to play for, but still turned out a decent performance. And it was nice to see Minnesota chomp at the heels of San Jose a little bit and not make it comfortable for them.
When you mention the San Jose record, and I'm looking at it right now,
yeah,
it is astounding to me to look at a team that's minus 21, to look at the goal difference of every team.
Yeah, it's so bizarre, isn't it? It's just, it's such a stark contrast to the actual way that things ended up. And it almost, it tells a story, but it sort of doesn't in a way.
Well, I think that the story that it does tell and the story that this game ultimately does is how important it is to actually get results, which is something we talk about as being a red flag for Kansas City. And how important it is to get results at home. With the 10-2-5, the road record was abysmal, 3-12-2. But it proves that a strong home record can forgive a lot. And being able to get the result that you need at the time that you need it can get you to a lot of good places.
Absolutely. And that's where Dallas has to be kicking themselves, is that, you know, they're tied on points and have exactly 21 goals fewer scored against them. But some of those key wins that they needed to pick up at home ended up being the difference between them and San Jose getting into the playoffs.
This is And this is where I'm torn, because I've always felt that goal difference is the better tiebreaker.
Yeah.
And the in the better indicator of a team's power beyond points. But I can't help but think that this is a problem for a lot of teams that are in the playoffs, and it's not wrong to reward getting results. It feels just.
And it's weird to say that, because illuminate it for folks at home, if you don't have the table in front of you, San Jose, of course, has the negative 21 goal difference, and FC Dallas is zero. So San Jose gave up 60 goals, whereas Dallas only gave up 48 and scored 48 goals, and San Jose scored only 39. So in a way, it feels, I get what you're saying, it feels a little bit unfair. However, as you said, a league that's tilted towards getting results is, if Dallas wins two more home games, all of a sudden the point difference is very different, and the wins certainly puts them ahead. So I don't feel like anybody in Dallas can feel hard done by, perhaps the supporters, but the team itself is like, well, you know, people are a little bit more switched on and put away a few more of those home games, and they wouldn't be in this position.
No, they wouldn't. What were some of the other key... so that was really the only one that really... Because those two were the only teams that were in contention, I think, for the spot at that time. It wasn't the only blowout of a team in the Western Conference.
Sure wasn't.
Not West, because I'm thinking of Orlando City.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Kaká.
Which, and he didn't play in this game.
Oh, he didn't.
Of course,
he right.
retired a game early for some reason.
Philadelphia 6, Orlando 1.
Yeah. And... Again, Philadelphia is probably another team that's slightly kicking themselves that they switched on so late into the season and still missed out on the playoffs. But in fairness to Orlando, they clearly put out a side of players that they wanted to have a look at. This was a year-end final game of, okay, let's look at players we haven't seen much of to decide who we want to bring back next year. And noticeable were the absences rather than the people who were included. And I feel like a number of the people who were not included in the game day sheet, not just Kaká for his retirement, but won't be back for next campaign.
They have choices to make. It's not been a fun year. Wow. I'm looking at that. I am looking at it, and there were a number of key players. Dom Dwyer still made it, and I think that mm-hmm. was a great acquisition for them, and I'm still not sure why Columbus made that choice.
Casey.
I'm still not sure why Casey did that. Did that midseason
trade. I think the money helped.
I guess the money helped. But yeah, do you see Kyle Larin going somewhere else in MLS, or do you? It is significant to see him absent.
I think it's a definite possibility. I don't know for sure. I don't know enough about that situation. I think for sure Will Johnson will be moving on, or at the very least he won't be back, and for good reason.
He was suspended, I believe, for this one.
Yeah. And quite apart from his off-field problems, as usual, Will Johnson has just professionally not delivered in many different capacities. And, you know, if he could straighten himself out, probably could be a great player. But all we've ever seen is flashes of that. And I feel like right now the script is kind of written for just a slow... Well, maybe not slow anymore, but just a further decline of what could have been a very great player, but who's going to struggle to find a team in MLS, I think, that wants to take the burden of a very inconsistent, expensive player who's 30 on.
I
don't think it was. I mean, yes, he was suspended, but at $250,000 contract, he's a very expensive liability.
Despite the fact that he, as a Whitecaps fan, he played for Portland, and I would say that charitably, this isn't necessarily a bad quality of soccer player or a player in any team sport, but I would describe him as hateable. Yeah. I really enjoyed his performances for the Canadian men's national team for that fire and for the leadership that he provided when he was on the pitch. So I've always kind of hoped for better for Will Johnson, but this was a give him a shot role. This is somebody whose talent obviously merits him in here. We're gonna see if he still has what we need, and they didn't get it from him. So you're right to say that I don't know who's going to turn around next and say, but me though.
Yeah. Well, and this was also before his arrest. So he burned that bridge, I think, even before that. And
yeah,
it's hard to feel sorry for a player that's been given every opportunity and every chance. And yeah, well, the less said, the better. I think he'll be sort of consigned to the rubbish bin of MLS players that coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Thank you for reiterating the elements of that, because it's really, it's important with the other myriad problems that Orlando City players have had, that we remember sort of the seriousness of what went on there.
Yeah, absolutely. So some other kind of events/non-events were Houston blowing out Chicago. Chicago, of course, had clinched some while ago, as had Houston. But it was interesting to see, watching the highlights of that game, Chicago really just get pulled apart and sort of come apart at the seams.
Mm-hmm.
And for a team that's done very, very well all year, one of the things that we've still seen is that despite the points difference, teams in the East have struggled against teams in the West. Okay. And not as dramatically as in previous seasons, but Houston certainly put a big exclamation point on the end of their season. They just tore Chicago completely apart. Probably one of the more clinical games on decision day.
It's interesting, and it's a good point to make in terms of correctly assessing Toronto FC and its potential dominance. Is that you would think in a conference, and I know the schedules are unbalanced, while the schedules are unbalanced, the East still does play the West. You would expect that when one team is running wild, that the other teams in the conference would see their point totals sort of go down by comparison if one team is hogging them all. Do you think? But if your position is that, like, we're seeing how easily a team like Houston, who is near the bottom of the Western Conference, could beat a team who is among the best in the East. But all of the Eastern, it's virtually a lock. No, not necessarily. But
when in fairness, that result bumped Houston up to fourth in the West. So
true.
Again, another team that has struggled, but again, crucially, a win really improved their position.
Do you think it's because everybody in the West, because the level of the West overall is higher, or what do you make of that? Because the point total certainly don't tell a whole story.
They really don't. I don't think it tells all that much. And although my team sits in the West, and those are the teams I see the most of throughout the season, I think the talent is comparable. And certainly when you look at the top two or three teams in the East, I think it's fair to say that those teams are fantastic teams that have gotten great results against much stiffer competition than there's been in the past. That being said, I think it has more to do with style of play as opposed to teams that are better or worse. Chicago likes to hold on to the ball. They like to build up through the middle. They do have pace for sure. They have the Golden Boot winner in Nikolic. However, against a very fast attacking and counter-attacking team in Houston, that got pretty easily cut out. Which isn't to take anything away from Houston's win. I think they took their chances fantastically and looked thoroughly switched on. But I don't think we can make the argument this season that the West is more talented than the East. I just think that the Eastern Conference teams, and this is a gross generalization,
generalize
focus a little bit more on possession and less on speed and counterattacking, where the West does. And so if you don't play a Western team that often, they're most of those teams, especially when you look at the top four in Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, Houston, they're very content to play with 30% possession of the ball and sit back and defend and wait for their chances. I don't see that in Toronto, New York City, or Chicago.
No. It's not the style.
No.
What do you think? I think that the key... Nothing really moved in the East in terms of the 1-2-3 positioning, partially because Chicago got blown out and New York drew with Columbus. So nobody, nobody really did that much to change what they were doing. And the Toronto Atlanta game we could talk about a little bit later, but there were some key decisions in between Portland, Vancouver, and Seattle. What did you think? Let's first just talk about that Seattle game.
Yeah.
Which was the three-nil win against the Rapids, despite going down to 10.
As the Sounders have proved time and time again, a little bit of everything during that match. It was interesting because Colorado recently has been on a bit of a tear, just playing for places and knowing they're well out of it, but really making life difficult for the other teams. But you would think that a red card to your key striker in the 22nd, 23rd minute would be something that would be a sure nail in the coffin, and yet it seemed to only give them energy, and in fact Colorado ended up with a red card of their own. And as we're talking about underrated strikers, Will Bruin turns out to be the hero of the day.
Yes.
And we've talked about Seattle's style of play, and obviously last year speaks for itself in terms of their grit and their ability to just get through a season. And I just pulled up some stats here about Will Bruin, but I want you to humor me for a second and play the part of myself before I looked at these stats and probably the average MLS fan. When you hear the name Will Bruin, you think of a guy that's been around in MLS forever. We know he had a long stint at Houston Dynamo, and he was kind of up and down, but could always be counted on to score goals.
The sentence that comes to mind is, let's see what he does.
Right. So it's interesting, and last year was his last year with the Houston Dynamo, and he played exactly the same number of games as he did this year with Seattle, but about 300 minutes less, so that's, what, about three games and change fewer?
Mm-hmm.
How many goals would you say, just if you had to guess, if you don't already know, how many goals do you think Will Bruin scored in his final year in Houston?
Remembering that was when the manager, who I believe was Owen Coyle, found his way out of Houston, I'm going to say 5.
Okay, you're close. That's good. So he scored 4 goals last season.
Mm-hmm.
11 the year before that, 10 the year before that, 8 the year before that, 12 the year before that, 5 the year before that. So he's been in the realm of the, like, 5 to 10-ish goals per season is an okay striker.
Uh-huh.
Interestingly, this year he scored 11 goals. So
in 300 fewer minutes.
With more minutes, sorry.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I mean, okay, this stat thing clearly didn't work for me. The point I'm trying to make here is, as much as Will Bruin is kind of written off and underrated,
yes.
20 games started and 11 goals, 2 assists is a pretty decent return on your money. And the fact that, especially in a big match like the Sunday one, that of course, sure, they're in the playoffs, but they go down a man, Dempsey's off for a clear elbow to the face, which apparently you can't do anymore. Who knew? I have to feel a little bit sorry for Will Bruin that he's written off so much. And you have to sort of think that, you know, if Seattle has some sort of like another miracle run in the cup in them, I don't think this is the last we'll hear of Will Bruin this season.
Apparently also, Dempsey has not received additional discipline for I think allegedly cussing out an official during that time.
Well, why start now?
But yeah, I think that when we've, when you go through each team's top scorer, there are lots of teams in the league where, 11 goals makes you the hero of the whole year. And, for example, Chris Wondolowski, we were just talking about, has 13. And if you were, I definitely would not have named Will Bruin as somebody that was like a key, not just a key performer, but a key producer for Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the other thing that's not quite seen always is the work done off the ball, is that he's a straight-ahead striker that's going to create space for other strikers. And while that doesn't always register as an assist, he's a big, imposing, very effective striker, and so he opens up space for other players just by his runs in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and speaking of that comparison, Freddy Montero, who's hailed as this sort of second coming for the Whitecaps, only has 13 goals this season and costs a lot more money than Will Bruin.
That is very true.
Notably, Clint Dempsey, who's also seems to be a fan of getting sent off, only has 12 goals, so he's really only one ahead of Will Bruin. And it's interesting when you hear about this year, we're singing the praises of Jordan Morris, Christian Roldan, Nicolas Lodero. Lodero's got 7, Roldan has 6, Jordan Morris has 3.
Yeah.
So Will Bruin may not be the flashy MLS striker that we want to talk about and is always exciting on the highlight reels, but he gets the job done very effectively. And as you mentioned, the last year he had in Houston was disastrous for everybody involved.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my takeaway would be, and he still managed to escape with 5 goals.
That's true.
So
I think that it's really positive to have that kind of presence for Seattle, because I think one of the challenges in the MLS Cup final against Toronto was that Lodero, they really relied on Lodero causing chaos around the pitch, and he got shut down and they didn't really have a second answer.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they won, but it could have easily been not. And if they want to perhaps have a slightly more dominating performance in the playoffs, in the later stages of the playoffs, more balanced production is the way to do it.
Absolutely. And as good as Lodero is, we've seen that kind of be the Achilles heel of Seattle, is that, you know, it's a bit of goals by committee and an overall team performance, but some of their key players really haven't delivered for them quite in the way that you would hope that they would. A team, though, in the West that has really risen to the occasion and has talent stacked across, especially the midfield, Much to my chagrin, is the Portland Timbers.
Yeah. It when you look at the array, and it's always been the case that they have such an array of attacking options available that you really just have to hope they all align, and sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. But they did. Of course, I'm sure Darren Maddux was pleased to score the winner just after halftime in the 2-1 win against the Whitecaps. But even without some of the key players like Diego Valeri and Darlington Nagbe scoring, it's like this is goals by Kamini in a different sense. You get the sense from Portland that players like that sort of everybody is on task. Mm-hmm. And sort of moving in the same direction to the common goal. Like, as much as somebody like David Guzman or Sebastian Blanco are not in those key, you know, star roles, you get a sense that they're incredibly committed and like, know what their role is, essentially.
Absolutely. I'm clicking around here because I want to find their starting lineup again. Because when you read out the team sheet, it really does kind of hit home, especially across.
I'm on it. If you're curious,
do you have it?
Yes.
What can you just read out, especially that midfield? Just read out those names.
Okay, so it's a four. It's a 4-5-1 with Guzman and Chara as the backline central midfielders. And Blanco, Valeri, and Nagbe is the front three in front of Darren Maddux. Behind Darren Maddux.
Right.
So if you've got Valeri, Nagbe, and Maddux, and Blanco, but yeah. Unfortunately, the fourth out of the four, but still, that's so powerful.
It is, and I, you know, Vancouver had a few issues to deal with in terms of their lineup. But I thought they were incredibly fortunate. I think Blanco had a terrible game. I mean, he was all over the place, but his shots were just also all over the place, and he wasn't able to put anything away, which I think was extremely lucky for Vancouver, because mm-hmm. for the amount of space that he was able to create, the number of shots that he was getting off, on another day, that could have been a 4-1 or a 5-1 victory for Portland quite tidily. Giving up that much possession to a team that loves to have possession, but also loves to counterattack. They were very lucky that the gears weren't quite turning. But what does it say about a team like Portland, and again, that midfield five that cannot really show up or be a little bit switched off or just unlucky, whatever you want to call it, and yet they still get the very, very crucial win?
Yeah, it is, they did win the Cascadia Cup. I believe they are the Western Conference champions. Mm-hmm. The inconsistency is always the maddening part, mm-hmm. unfortunately, but this is the danger, that we see with Vancouver in giving a team that is so... that is so potent, all of this possession, because you can't you know, go back and second guess the decision making, but if you give even a team that's having a frustrating day but is this good a lot of time, they're figuring it out.
Yeah, which was clearly evident. I mean, that was not luck that won that game. I think it was pretty shrewd tactics by Caleb Porter. And, you know, I guess the one bright side would be, I think the Whitecaps played a little bit less frustratingly than they have as of late. They haven't had a great run of results in the last few games. Mm-hmm. I felt like overall as a team, they played quite well. It was ultimately down to a couple of mistakes at the back line, which, as much as you want to talk about Waston and Parker doing better this season, the fact is they've still bled a lot of goals. Mm-hmm. Harvey seemed really pulled out of place, which was unfortunate to see. And ultimately, they just came, the Whitecaps came back into the game way too late. And then they're really relying on a couple of key balls to fall for them. And then just opportunities wasted. We've seen it with all season from Breck Shea and from Alphonso Davies. Noticeably, Alphonso Davies didn't make the starting 18 this match. But just wasting shots that really, you know, they need to be a little bit more patient in their build-up. And, you know, I guess as a Whitecaps fan, it was just interesting to see Noza Igibor make his start and see what he's about. I thought he had a good game. I thought Ali Ghazal, aside from a couple of pieces, had a fantastic game. So we're talking about a patchwork midfield here. The defensive midfielders are both new. Ghazal seems like he's sort of been at the club forever, although remembering, you know, his, what, his maybe seventh match now with the injury to Matias Laba, and Tony Chani's suspension made it necessary to bring in Igibor, who's not quite match fit yet. So overall, I think they, you know, Carl Robinson isn't trying to just do the coach thing where he keeps his chin up and tries to keep his team motivated, even though they're losing going into the playoffs.
Right.
But I think we've mentioned this a couple of times. Portland and Seattle are better teams. This season, on paper and on the pitch, they're better teams.
Yep.
And it's shown in the results, and I don't think anybody can be too surprised by that result.
This is, for the Whitecaps, sort of the statement start for Stefan Marinovic. We've talked before, is he the starter? I can't imagine that he isn't now. Unfortunately, that seems to have coincided with perhaps his worst moment since since
well,
doing
okay,
it with,
so
I believe
there's
he
my,
missed,
question,
he
my question
it,
then
right?
My question is that spill that leads to the goal. Do you think that raises a question mark about whether or not he starts on Wednesday? Or do you think it's been figured out? Because you also said, like, whoever is the goalkeeper going into the playoffs is likely going to be the goalkeeper in the playoffs. Do you think that has changed now, or would you change it?
I maintain that I think it has been and continues to be dangerous to mess around with this so deep in the season. I'm still not for it. Even though Marinovic has, by all accounts, done well and justified the place that he has received. I'm not, it bothers me. I don't see a lot of good from it. And the same thing that made me say that I thought that Ustad should start the playoffs makes me think that now, just because of one, if you decided to make this guy the starter, one result shouldn't be the one that makes you change your mind. Or like not even just one result, but one play.
Yeah. No, I think I agree with that, is that the danger now would be if you put Ostead in, you're putting him against a San Jose team he hasn't played against recently.
Yeah.
And you have a goalkeeper in Marinovic that has played against them recently, and I would say the goals against San Jose really weren't his fault, so you could put in a goalkeeper that just played them a week ago and, yes, made a mistake, but I mean, it's so tricky. Every bone in my body is just like, put Ostead in. It's what the team's used to. There's enough change. But you also see the way that Marinovic organizes the defenders in front of him a little bit differently and communicates differently and again distributes the ball up the field differently, that there's a whole host of reasons you go, well, like, well, you've already made your decision to switch it up, so don't switch it up again.
We'll talk about this a little bit later. The benefit to doing the thing that you could do is to try to fake out the other team and not announce a starter until the absolute last minute that you have to. Perhaps you, I don't think with the opponent being San Jose, I think it's, and that you're playing San Jose at home, and San Jose has that terrible road record, I think it's okay to be confident and play them directly.
Yeah, and it was interesting, too, in the post-game comments, Marinovic was certainly talking like he's going to be starting, which I know doesn't mean a lot, but I think that's, you know, his confidence going to them that match. He knows what San Jose is about a little bit right now. Uh-huh. And we also know San Jose bleeds goals at home or away, and it may well come down to the goalkeeper tomorrow night in Vancouver to just come up with some big saves, whether that's Ostead or Marinovic. But you have to feel, I think, that Marinovic is going to be the favorite to see them through. And Robinson is, despite the positivity that he talks about, he's a very pragmatic manager, and I don't think his ambitions go much beyond this knockout round. I think he knows they're very lucky to be in this position, and he's going to be very pragmatic about the lineup, and he's going to put out the team that will try to beat San Jose, and they're not going to be thinking about who they'll be facing in the conference semifinals if they happen to win.
That makes sense. Before we move into talking wholesale about the upcoming matchups, is there anything that popped out to you from remaining from the last set of games? Because I had two things. One of them was Montreal, New England, saying goodbye to Patrice Bernier, who has been such a mark of stability both for the Canadian men's national team and for the seeing him return to the Impact after playing with them in 2002 has been great.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point to bring up and an unfortunate note to go out on with a loss to New England. We don't need to say any more about New England this season and too little too late, but
also kind of a characteristic of Montreal to give it up late in that in what was a what would have been a symbolic victory.
Indeed, and responded in due form by firing the coach and the entire coaching staff.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Which I think is deserved. I think I'm not a big fan of reactionary coaching moves, but Montreal got comfortable this year and really didn't seem to show like they really had any ideas. So I don't think that's a poor move. But I agree with you that the focus should be on Patrice Bernier and a fantastic career for what he's given to club and country. And it was nice to also see that even with a loss, the team respond and the fans respond and really see him off well. Mm-hmm. This is a player that's probably, you know, flown under the radar far more significantly than your Kakas and your Landon Donovans, etc. But it was nice to see that it did matter to people, and they, rather than dwelling on a loss that didn't mean that much, really, but... Mm-hmm. They were focusing on the captain that's given so much to that team.
Yes. I think that with the departure of Biello, which had been rumored for many weeks prior to its actual announcement, we've talked a lot about the promising young players and the potential of the squad in Montreal, and I think it's a great time to look for somebody that can get the maximum, can realize the potential that is contained in it.
Yeah, absolutely. They really they've got so much ready there, so much potential. And I think, you know, perhaps they're just feeling a bit of the hangover from the Drogba saga, and relying a little bit too much on Piatti at times, but they've locked Piatti in, and it's up to a new coach to come in and really capitalize on that and build a team of promise. I think they need to fill out the roster a little bit in terms of what's between the Piattis and the Jackson Hamels, the youth and the elders. But they've got a good backbone, and it's, this is far from a team that needs to clean deck And the fact that they've done that with their coaching staff and the head coach, I think, is a signal of intention that there's a lot of players that played this season that should be back next season. But they need to definitely make some additions and perhaps bring up some more younger players and give them the shot.
Compare contrast with Orlando in sort of the squad, the positioning in terms of a squad that will return.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Orlando, you know, Joe Bendick maybe will be back.
Yes.
Outside of that, we'll see.
The other thing I wanted to mention, even though it didn't prove necessary to any positions changing, but the Atlanta and Toronto drawing 2-2 in a decision that I think made the most narrative sense in that Toronto got the were able, it would have been wasteful for them to not collect that final point that would have them break the record after such an astounding season. But it is, I think, fitting that it's sort of a handshake and a thought that we will see each other soon.
Yeah.
With Giovinco scoring in the 84th minute to tie things up 2-2.
And also credit where credit is due. We know how I feel about Giovinco, but that's possibly the best free kick I've ever seen in MLS.
He's solid. It's got the magic.
It just, yeah. I mean, you couldn't write a better script if you'd walked on the pitch with the ball in your hands and placed it exactly where you wanted to go. It was still better.
I haven't seen it. So what was the key? What set it apart?
I guess the funny thing is it didn't set itself apart from any other Giovinco free kick. But it was one of those things of just really supreme placement. The wall was well placed, and it's one of those things where it's like the goalkeeper, the wall does its job and jumps. The goalkeeper guesses the right way, and he just clatters it into the left hand top side off of the crossbar and in. And you don't feel like it was a mistake. Like, he really was trying to hit the crossbar and knock it in. And he's 25, 30 yards out and just does what Giovinco does in a very crucial free kick. We know he can do it, and we know he can do it in games that matter, but he's the kind of player that can visualize, okay, I missed this, we don't win that record. I get it in, we make that record. It's going in. And just decides, and then places it. Like, it just seemed like it was a foregone conclusion. I don't know if he was spurred on a little bit by the sip of beer he had from the beer cup that was thrown at Altidore after Altidore scored. But, you know, as much as I really dislike Giovinco, that game to me was one of those ones where you just have to go, you know what, tip of the hat to you. Mm-hmm. You get mocked during the goal celebration, and just cool as you like, picks up the beer thing off of the pitch and has a little swig and then chucks it away. Doesn't incite much in the crowd, but, you know, just enough, the right amount of disrespectful. But as usual, his performance speaks for itself. He's in a class unto his own. However, as we've seen, they still gave up goals.
Yes.
And that is going to continue to be the question mark over Toronto. Is this yet another case of Toronto breaking all of the expectations and doing fantastically well and then just coming up slightly short?
Mm-hmm.
So.
They are, however, and it can be said, the best team ever.
Yeah.
Is
true.
We've talked about the Donuts before. Atlanta, again, for the second time in the season, setting the MLS attendance record. Previously, it was 74-25 in their game against their opening game in Mercedes-Benz Stadium against Orlando. They now had they were able to pack in 71,874.
Mm-hmm.
The record, yes.
Somebody in Atlanta is going like, shit, we should have made it 80,000 capacity.
just to get a couple more in. A few more and a few more and a few more.
We didn't think we'd fill it this season.
I have no indication whether or not they're going to open the full complement for the playoffs. I can't imagine they wouldn't. But the playoff record is... the playoff record is standing there to be broken of 61,316 to see the Galaxy beat the New England Revolution in the 2002 MLS Cup Final.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that's the final. And the second, 61,004 saw Montreal Impact beat TFC in the Eastern Conference Finals first leg last year, which was also bonkers. But they stand poised to smash it again.
Yeah, quite potentially. So in the Eastern Conference, so I believe they will be playing in Atlanta against Columbus.
Yes.
On Thursday, the 26th, correct?
Yes.
So I feel like that one's I feel like probably fairly easily another attendance breaker.
Mm-hmm. How do you think that one's going to play out?
At home in Atlanta, I think Atlanta wins that one. I'm going to say 3-2 for Atlanta.
I think that, that makes sense. I think the, just from what little I've seen of them in the stadium, I think they pick up in that stadium every time they score a goal.
Yeah.
So if they go behind, I think it's the scenario where it's an easy place for them to catch up, I would imagine.
Absolutely. But I also feel like Columbus is going to come out flying at them in ways that we haven't seen too much this season, but we've started to see a little bit more towards the end. And we know Ola Kamara and his crew behind him are ready to go. And I think that one is, to me, possibly one of the more exciting matches that will be played this week.
Yes.
Especially knowing it's going to be a knockout. It's not being played over two stages.
Mm-hmm.
Columbus is sometimes a bit of a slow burn. I think we can probably expect to see our old friend Kakuta Mane make an appearance and mm-hmm. throw some speed at Atlanta. But mm-hmm. I feel like there's going to be some goals in that game.
Yes. Nothing to lose for the crew. You know, they're not a team that... they're not a team that has had issues, I think, in the Sporting KC model of trying to decide when to let loose and when to hold tight.
Yeah.
Can't imagine they will be holding much back.
No, and they yeah, exactly. They can afford to do it. What they've got nothing to lose, and especially with the recent news that they've been faced with, it's one of those things where you truly say, go out and express yourselves. Just go play the game, have fun. Soak up that massive atmosphere and give Atlanta a bit of a show.
Without spending too much time going over decisions that are part of the league fabric, I've overheard people in their ideas of how to improve MLS in the wake of the U.S. men's national team defeat. Somebody suggested reducing the number of playoff teams, or at the very least trying to balance the schedule a little bit better. Do you think the knockout rounds, in the way that they open up opportunities to teams that perhaps do not perform as well, or the single game nature, do you think it's a positive in the league at this point?
It's very bizarre because it's one of the few leagues in the world that does it. I do like that it's a little bit more competitive. I think if the U.S. men's national team really wants to improve, then like perhaps our buddy Zambrano said, there should be more opportunities for domestic players, period. Noticeably, one of the teams that has a number of Americans on its roster is Columbus Crew. So maybe they just need to dig a little deeper. I don't know. There's always arguments that can be made. I think it's up to the coaching staff of the national teams to be doing their homework and looking at teams that maybe aren't blowing people away, but look at the players that are going to come in and complement your squad, as you would if you coached any team.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always going to be the top players from every top team that are your key players. And if that's the way you're going to do your homework, then I don't think you're doing it right. But I'm okay with the way that the MLS system works currently.
The other matchup in the East is Chicago versus New York.
What do you think's going to happen there?
Well, the issue that I think is presented by the way Chicago have had their run in and slipped out of the I guess they never were in it, but there was a, I think the second spot in the conference was theirs at one point, and the absence of Bastian Schweinsteiger has been, I think, marked. Can they do it without him?
I don't know. I feel like the same mediocrity that has plagued Chicago Fire as of late has also plagued the New York Red Bulls. So I feel like this is really... And I mean this honestly, I think this is going to be one of the more interesting results and probably one of the least interesting games that will be played in the knockout round. Chicago deserves to be there, as does New York, but have not had particularly impressive seasons, and it's really just been a case of getting enough results to be in. Chicago's obviously done a little bit more.
Yes.
You feel like the Fire are favorites there, but again, without Schweinsteiger, they've been lacking. And the thing that we know about the Red Bulls is the pace. And just being, especially lately, a little bit more clinical where it matters.
Yes.
If, from another angle, I think Chicago should win this, just based on what they've been able to put together this year. And based on the talent that they have in their team, with or without Schweinsteiger, they should win this one. But I see it as perhaps a New York 2-1 win.
I'm
only making goal predictions, by the way, to keep myself entertained. I'm probably going to be way off about these.
I think that New York really lives and dies by how they capitalize on the potential of their goal scorers. Whereas yes. Chicago... relies more heavily on team balance.
Mm-hmm.
would be my read of the situation, and the result of that, especially, and I'm not sure if Schweinsteiger is going to be available for them. The result of that is that if Bradley Wright Phillips is on, they're on.
Yeah.
And that's been the season. That's been the story the whole time. That's what's been frustrated when they. That's what's been frustrating about it. When they have not been able to achieve results, is that they have the ability to do it if they if everything was together. Schweinsteiger is listed as questionable, but it is by MLSsoccer.com. But it is still projected in the starting 11.
Yeah, and I would imagine that they'll try to get him out for at least 45 minutes. If he can stand on two legs, they'll try to get him out there.
Mm-hmm.
But we know what a threat Kleshton and BWP can be. So we'll see. I think Chicago should win it, but I think New York could take that one 2-1.
Houston? Kansas City are, I think that compared, when you talk about sort of the interest potential of the games in the East, the knockout games in the West are the each feature a team that really needs to prove itself. And Kansas City is one that sort of I've harped on all season for getting results, and sort of, you know, sputtering out and scoring in a key time. And I think that you look at the fact that they are away here. There was no reason that had to be the case for them. if they had played closer to their potential, if they had more attacking teeth. There's no reason they had to be fifth in the West.
Nope. And also coming off a defeat to a pretty wounded Real Salt Lake, although we know RSL is coming to form rather late, like a lot of teams this season.
Mm-hmm.
It would be concerning at this point. The thing that makes this game a bit of a question mark for me, or a big question mark, is the fact that Houston, we know they can score goals. They've got counter-attacking, pace to burn, 57 goals for. They've been very, very good this year. That's second most goals in the Western Conference. Three only behind Portland. But they've also given up a lot of goals in 45 this season.
Mm.
So they're a team that can get scored against. And they're playing against the team in the West with the best defensive record, with only 29 goals conceded. By a long shot, Sporting KC has a better defensive record. However, we know that they've struggled with scoring goals. So this one to me is the, like, which way does this go? Do we see two teams just sort of look each other in the eye, kick the ball around for 90 minutes, and then it goes to penalties? Or does Houston come out of the gates, storm the barn, blow Sporting KC away?
Now, Houston ended with, I think that if you are Houston, you have got to capitalize on your momentum. You just beat a great, a generally great fire team handily with a lot of scoring. Mm-hmm. I think you've got to, and you're playing at home, a place where you have an excellent record. I think you've mm-hmm. got to come out guns blazing and take control of it, especially against a team that that can choke you out if you let them.
Yeah, I agree. And Chicago, to me, I think was the tougher game out of the two.
Yeah.
KC is great defensively, but again, they just struggle to score goals. And as you said, if you can beat a strong offensive Chicago Fire 3-0, you're at home. I think Elise and Alex are going to be the difference makers in this one, but I see that as being a 2-0 or a 2-1 for Houston.
We can sort of end this preview portion the way we started it with Vancouver and San Jose, and I think that we talked about it was great for San Jose to have that moment mm-hmm. to end the season, but reality sets in that they were credit to them for being on the winning side of the San Jose Dallas RSL matrix. But they have got to show better than they have shown, especially in the second half of the season, in order to take this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, and it's hard too because we know that they just played each other, but this is going to be a very different game. At the same time, who knows? Maybe it plays out in much the same way. This is a game that Vancouver needs to win and should win. Mm-hmm. And I don't just say that as a Vancouver Whitecaps fan. They've had a much better season than San Jose. They're much more clinical. Arguably, they're more creative. If you can get Reyna and Bolaños and Montero clicking together, there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to put this game away at home.
Mm-hmm.
But San Jose has proved to be the wild card, and the biggest mistake the Whitecaps could make is not taking San Jose seriously and thinking that, again, they're going to come in and know that they can come from behind. They know that they're not out of it until they're out of it. And this is really one of those ones that's a bit of a boxing match. Vancouver needs to score more goals. I see this as, the result will be this. The team that scores 3 or more goals will likely win, but that may not be enough.
Yeah. That is very true. I think that the run-in has been... You know me. I've been skeptical about this Vancouver first in the West thing for many weeks now. And
I think most Vancouver Whitecaps fans have been. We were like, isn't that great? And you're like,
But people are still disappointed. And it sucks,
which does say a lot.
Yes. Maybe about people's expectations and what happens when you build them up. But I mean, like, this is a team that has achieved a certain sort of attacking balance since the arrival of Jordy Reyna, and they're easy to believe in, and there have been situations in the team's past where it feels like being let down again, and you don't want to feel like you were let down again. Not to be the overly, you know, to try and struggle too hard to act like I ain't even mad. but to look at the silver lining, I don't think if Vancouver lost that game to Portland, but they had at some point in the line, down the line, picked up the 2 points necessary to squeak in up top. I think that it would really suck to not have a game like this, that they should win. Not to discount San Jose, but you know, you do have to win this. It's true of all the knockout round games, but it's like the chance to head into the conference quarterfinals with a little bit of pep in your step is helpful. And that's something that I've been wondering about my teams this whole time.
Absolutely. And I mean, the real difference maker here is that ironically, if not ironically, but just, of note is that if Vancouver won on Sunday and results went a different way, and Vancouver ended up first, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they'd be waiting in the conference semifinals, likely for Portland or Seattle to come through.
Right.
And so I feel like they've actually been given a great gift in that it's like, okay, guys, prove that you deserve to be there against San Jose. Put that game away and then duke it out with Portland or Seattle.
This is the antidote to that feeling of disappointment, for sure.
Yeah. I think if we lose in the semifinals to Portland and Seattle, which if we win, I feel like is kind of inevitable. Sorry, Whitecaps fans. I think that still it's going further than we've ever been before, and we have a chance to prove ourselves over two legs.
Mm-hmm.
I think for Vancouver, it's really not acceptable to get knocked out against San Jose or to get knocked out in the knockout round, considering recent runs of form. They need to and they should win this game against San Jose. It's not going to be easy. San Jose is going to throw everything they have at them, and they will not be out of it until the very final minute. But this is a game that Vancouver needs to step up and manage, and they need to play a little differently than what we've seen them do. I'm not convinced that they've got that in their bag of tricks.
It'll be rough. I think that we are in a scenario where Cascadia has arisen. Not to say that it is a fait accompli that Portland would beat Houston or KC if those presented themselves, but if the league is interested in pushing this angle of Cascadia rivalry and traveling support, the idea of having two games in close succession between Seattle and Vancouver, if they were to beat the San Jose Earthquakes, and then having the winner of that series go on to a two-leg series against Portland, could do a lot for the league's image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So we've got New York City FC, Toronto, Seattle, and Portland lying in wait in the conference semifinals.
Mm-hmm.
There was one more thing of note that I wanted to add to this week.
Please.
Which was one game that I did get to go to and see was the final home game of the UBC Thunderbirds women's soccer team.
Oh, this week, yes.
Or last week. Mm-hmm. Which I think it's just worth pointing out that Jasmine Danda, who's been outstanding, and she's only just come onto my radar and a lot of other people's radars recently, now has become the all-time leading scorer and points winner in Western Canada.
Wow.
And she did that in the first minute of their final home game. And you could kind of see how she got there, because truly, like, a tall, imposing striker. No nonsense. She literally wears the number 9 as well. Providing balls for people, but also just, like, a really, really clinical finish. And, you know, when you just have one of those moments, I thought, like, this is our next Christine Sinclair. Like, this girl will be on the national team, and Jasmine Danda is not done. And for somebody so young to just snatch that, the title of all-time leading scorer and points winner is, like, yeah, the girl's the real deal.
I've been, you know, I think that it's really tough with, we haven't talked much about this, but Whitecaps 2 moving away from UBC. Mm-hmm. Nominally, the Whitecaps Training Center is supposed to be a home for the Canadian Women's National Team, too, if they want it. And the link-up between teams... between teams like the UBC Thunderbirds and the national program needs to be better, because players mm-hmm. players like this that are having such wonderful seasons, even if you look at even if the triangle the pyramid does not often stretch to U Sports,
mm-hmm.
You've got to look at who is playing soccer in this country. No matter where they are and what results they're getting, and I'm not aware right now where Jasmine Danda sits on the radar, but you've got to if nominally these programs are operating in the same position, I hope it's I definitely hope that it is something we see soon.
Absolutely. And I didn't even know about that connection. It makes a lot of sense. But I think that UBC is well poised to have their players linked up to that. And yeah, as you said, let's hope.
She played for the U17s a little bit and was in a U20 camp in 2013, but hasn't made an appearance any time recently.
I feel like she might be on their radar now.
Hopefully. Like I said, it's not... When I was in Vancouver, I covered both the men's and women's teams. And you've got to... players like Guy Gonzalez, who came through the... Eventually moved from the Thunderbirds to the Whitecaps residency system and moved on to... a spot in Edmonton is one benefit you can get when, like I said, you look at how people are performing, no matter what the perceived path should be. You look at how people are performing.
Absolutely.
There's one thing you were talking about wanting to get to with Columbus.
Oh, I did it already. I did it at the very beginning. I did a little just me intro thing. While I was waiting for you, because I didn't get your text that you were
right. Busy, yes, so. You had said yes. You said that. You said that.
But
actually,
if you didn't catch it at the beginning, Columbus Crew's in a spot of bother. So. And also, as we know about MLS supporters clubs, they come to each other's rescue and they have each other's backs. So just encouraging people that, You know, don't just be like, what's that thing that's going on with that club? Like, you know, tune in a little bit if you can to the story going on in Columbus, Ohio, and follow hashtag Save the Crew. And if you're a member of a supporters club, or if you're interested in it, find out ways that you can get involved and support our fellow fans that follow teams around the league, even if they're our enemies on the pitch. Certainly, we want to make sure that those teams are all treated fairly, and that teams don't just go running off and disappearing to cities that can all of a sudden offer some more money for a flashy new stadium. Or not.
We have seen, I think that it's really important, as much as the MLS is a franchise league and clubs are talked about as franchises, it doesn't have to be the case that things like this are passively accepted as a way of doing business. Not everywhere in the world is it just thought of, well, this is, that's sad, but I guess it's happening that a team relocates. It's good to get upset about it, because it is really frustrating what's happened there, and how key Columbus is to U.S. soccer, both as a home for the U.S. men's national team and for the MLS. It's really frustrating to see them not really being respected in that way, and in a time when across pro sports you see teams that you would never have expected relocation to even be a part of the discussion, like the Calgary Flames in the NHL. When public arenas come up, there's a side to be on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to add your voice to the list of people that call for proper negotiation and proper, like, you know, respect for the fan base that are out there. We talked about mm-hmm. it in the last show that MLS said that, you know, we're committed to our communities, and every team tries to be committed to the community. But there's no...
Yeah, for how many years, though? When does that expire, right?
We learn in a situation like the Columbus thing, where it really, the ownership sneaks up on you, and there's no team that isn't a bad owner away from this. It's tough to say bad if you're saying they're justified by the key business indicators, but there's nobody is safe, so you gotta add your voice to the call, I think.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've got a variety of games happening tomorrow and Thursday. So,
yes.
I believe we're gonna chat on the weekend. I think we're gonna let people watch the games. We'll see what happens. We'll let everybody recover as need be, and then we'll be talking about kind of how things might shape up in the semifinals over the two-leg stretch.
Yes.
For people. But we're not going to be immediately after Wednesday or immediately after Thursday covering things, because, as we know, sometimes it takes things a little while to set in. And who knows what Disco will do in the intervening time.
We'll do our best to have a great tee-up for the second round, the first round proper, whatever you choose to call it, of the playoffs when they do arrive.
Indeed.
Where can we find you online?
You can find me online dissing Clint Dempsey at That's So MLS.
You can find me at Team Bates. Go to whatahowler.com to check out the fall issue. You can find this podcast on iTunes and other places where great podcasts like ours are obtained. Please rate, review, and subscribe when you can.
Yeah, we don't ever plug our podcast on the podcast.
But hey, so go subscribe to it.
Yeah, if you have made not it already, this far.
If you haven't
make it
already.
Count.
And tell people about it if you enjoy it, please.
Yeah, we're the Philadelphia Union of podcasts. There's something to like.
Yes.
We're building for the future.
Yes. I hope you enjoy these knockout rounds. Are you going?
I'm not going. I'm going to be in transit. Well, actually, you know what? I should be at my final destination tomorrow by about 7:30 on the dot. So, unfortunately, I will not be in Vancouver to watch our knockout round, but I will be watching.
Last minute weekday games are frustrating. Well, I hope you enjoy watching that. And in the meantime, don't get sent off.